Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Provinces that have shrunk in size and in prominence are the ones who have gone the way of the culture. And so the Church of England just has to look at its empty pews Sunday after Sunday to recognize the clock is ticking.
We're not about defending every Christian's moral behavior in the history of the church. The fact is the church has been full of 100% sinners from the beginning.
So Thanksgiving arises out of that recognition that faith sees behind the daily bread the will of God for us, which is only possible because Christ died for us.
Homeschooling moms with piano beginners practicing in the house, love issues, etc.
Well, the headline reads, Santa Claus's tomb may have been uncovered beneath Turkish church. Now, if you go looking for a picture of someone dressed in red and ermine, perhaps a pair of reindeer reins in his hand, that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about the origin story, so to speak, of the Santa Claus myth, and that is a real person, St. Nicholas, about which the church knows precious little, although there are a lot of legends attached to him, including the legend that eventually leads to Santa Claus in his red suit riding in his sleigh, none of which would apply in particular to St. Nicholas. But to find a 4th century bishop's tomb is still a big deal. It's not strictly biblical archaeology, but it's still Christian archaeology. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, October the 11th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about the reported discovery of St. Nicholas' tomb. Dr. Craig Evans will be our guest for the first few minutes of the program. After that, Pastor Jonathan Fisk joins us for part 8 of our series on raising Christian children in an age of progressivism. We'll talk a little bit more about boundaries and the changing ages of our children, especially when our children have children. Dr. Corey Moss of Hillsdale College will be our guest after that to talk about a document that is almost 18 years old now, and somehow back in the news, the Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification probably has something to do with the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. Then Pastor Tom Baker will be our guest. Teach a Sunday school lesson on the Old Testament prophet Jonah. That's all ahead in the next 2 hours of Issues, Etc. And you can join us as well with your questions and your comments. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at IssuesETC. And the Issues, Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the reported discovery of St. Nicholas's tomb, Dr. Craig Evans. He's a regular guest, distinguished professor of Christian origins and the dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. Dr. Evans, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
How would you say this kind of archaeology, I would call it Christian archaeology, ecclesiastical archaeology, relates to biblical archaeology? We know that biblical archaeology tends to be the best friend of the claims of Holy Scripture. What do we say about a lot of the archaeology related to things after the apostolic era?
Well, sometimes if it's the apostolic era, the archaeology in question might actually have strong links to, you know, biblical data. The House of Peter, for example, at Capernaum, even though you end up with a Byzantine-era chapel, a church, octagonal church, right on into the 7th century, that's patristic, that's church fathers, and yet it's located at a biblical place. It's the Capernaum of the New Testament, and it even has reasonable credibility. It might actually be the very place. the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, same thing. It's Constantine's mother who decides that is the place after talking with locals. And so the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is built there. Is this the actual place where Jesus was buried? Well, it might be. The archaeology is credible enough that it's reasonable to think that that probably is the location. The trouble is when you start moving outside of the land of Israel itself, or outside of places that are described in the book of Acts, where we know early Christians were, or apostles actually were headquartered, and then you move further and further away into later times, and that's when it begins to become legendary. We're not really sure, was Andrew, you know, the brother of Peter, was he really there in Greece? Was Barnabas, did he really die, and was he buried in Salamis, Cyprus? I've actually visited that spot. And, of course, then you end up with somebody who's a saintly person who apparently spawns the legend that eventually becomes Santa Claus, and we know even less about that individual. So the further away we move in time and in location, it gets a lot more challenging.
What do they believe, at least according to the reports, that they have found there in this church in Turkey?
Well, they think that beneath the church are archaeological remains, cultural remains, a tomb, portions of a tomb, and so on, that credibly date to the 4th century. And so, and why was that venerated? And who else was well known? And so when you get back that far, there are a limited number of candidates. And so it's not like there are dozens of people that might have been buried there. It's a small number. And if you have what I have described before as continuity of memory, that is, there really is an almost unbroken chain from the time in question to the present, where you have buildings being built on buildings, a continuity of presence, people there, people remembering what that was all about, who used to be buried there, and that sort of thing. Then historians and archaeologists have confidence that perhaps this is the right place. Now, I haven't seen enough of the details yet relating to the St. Nicholas site, and eventually this material will be published. It could be that it's correct. It could be that it is not, and that it's some sort of a legend that developed later. But it is possible to trace, like a chain of evidence, it is possible sometimes to trace it back to whoever this person is and conclude, provisionally anyway, that it is the right location.
Why could you explain kind of in to the layperson why the earliest Christians, including up to the 4th century and beyond, were in the habit of either founding churches on sites of martyrdom or death or the grave of bishops and other people of prominence?
Well, I think they were inspirational. Martyrs were inspirational. The apostles themselves, most of whom were martyred as well. Other great teachers who gave leadership to the church, people who rose in rank as a bishops, and so forth. And so, and after all, there weren't very many churches, so where are you going to build a church? And so, I think for lots of reasons, certain sites were selected because Christians would gather there. They'd gather there and pray and remember somebody who had been their leader and who had been an inspiration, who had given them confidence. And so, I'm not surprised that that was the habit. In the Jewish tradition, there were sacred sites. This was very true in the time of Jesus, in and around the Holy Land, sites that were remembered where some prophet may have lived, where some event took place, and a memorial would be built there, maybe even a synagogue. So there was the custom in the first place, which I think Christians inherited. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that churches would be built at places, at sites where someone was remembered as a great teacher, an inspirational person, maybe even a miracle worker, and perhaps that's where he's buried as well. So it doesn't surprise me at all.
How do you even go about doing this? There's an existing church. It may, in some cases, have been built on top of the foundations of a previous structure church. We're talking about exceedingly ancient sites. How do you go about excavating something like that? What kind of protocols are followed?
Sometimes it's not possible, but in cases where it's possible, it's usually because when a church is built over a spot, they don't intend to completely bury it or cover it up. Usually there is some kind of access that is, you know, it's in the basement, as it were. There is some kind of an undercroft, and so the church is built over it, but the sacred site is still exposed and accessible. Where it gets complicated is where the early church, for whatever reason, the Islamic conquest or whatever, gets knocked down, falls down on top of what had been the sacred spot, and then a later church, maybe a Crusader church or in the Middle Ages at some time, another church is built, and it's just a question of how carefully the new builders remove some of the rubble of the previous church, left enough of it there so that archaeologists later can identify it, and yet still had access without destroying it, still had access to the original structure that drew all the attention in the first place, such as a tomb or whatever it is. And if there is enough material left from down through the ages, archaeologists can identify it. And discoveries like this are being made all the time, where maybe it's repair work or something like that. A floor is lifted up, and then they discover beneath the floor, a meter down or so, is an old mosaic. That leads to further study. Then they find out there's an old Roman bathhouse beneath that. And they go down into that, and they find Christian graffiti. And they realize, my goodness, Christians were actually meeting down here in this location and worshiping in the first or second century. So sometimes these discoveries are accidental, but always there's this, you might say, chain of evidence, one layer after another, that shows a continuing occupation, interest, evidence of Christians. And that's what gives this kind of thing a lot of credibility.
To be clear here, they have found what they believe to be the site of a tomb, but no body. Is that correct?
As far as I know, but you never know. There could be trace elements, bone chips. It's hard to say. Sometimes sacred relics were picked up and moved. And with the Islamic conquest, I wouldn't be surprised at all if things that were considered holy and relics like that would be removed, exhumed, and taken to a new location. And so it's those kinds of vicissitudes that complicate things and interfere with the chain of evidence.
How many sites, either biblical or like the one we're talking about here, kind of post-apostolic early church sites, have a history to them involving Muslim conquest that complicates things or maybe even makes it easier to date a few things?
In some cases it does, because there's a damage, there's a destruction level or some kind of markers like that that make it easier to date. Well, the entire Holy Land has been, over the years, overrun by Islamic armies. That's all of North Africa. That would be Spain as well. It would be Cyprus, the island, Crete as well, or not so much Crete, but certainly all of Cyprus, all of Israel, all of Asia Minor, the eastern part of Greece. For Christendom, the great loss was Constantinople being overrun. It's Istanbul today. So there would be countless, depending on how you rate it and how important it is, it would be dozens of sites that have been overrun. Now, in some of these sites, the Muslim conquerors respected them, and especially if they're Old Testament related, because they would be seen as part of the Islamic history as well, like Abraham, the patriarchs. And so those they wouldn't be seen as like synagogues or churches that were likely to be torn down. And so they would be preserved, perhaps maybe a mosque built on top of it or something like that. So it depends from site to site. But when you think about it, this is the cradle of Christianity, the Middle East, North Africa, Asia, Greece, and most of that area overrun at one time or another. Many churches and monasteries torn down, and the holy sites beneath them compromised, depending on what all had happened.
A couple other questions in that vein. When you're dealing with that, sometimes is that a good indicator? If you can find an ancient mosque, you might well have found the site of an ancient church as well?
Oh, yes. Muslims made a habit of building mosques in the Middle East wherever there were Judeo-Christian presence, and the ground was considered sacred because biblical history had been appropriated in large part by the Quran and Muhammad's successors. And so old churches, old synagogues, oftentimes remains of these places or holy sites, maybe not necessarily churches or synagogues, but holy to Christians and Jews, and a mosque would end up being built right on top of it. Of course, the most obvious example is the Golden Dome, Dome of the Rock, on the Temple Mount, which rests very likely right on top of where the previous Jewish temples at one time had stood.
Finally, then, why is it worth it for archaeologists to pay attention to sites even beyond the biblical era?
Oh, I think it's important for archaeologists to do that because we don't want to lose sight of the fact that archaeology is concerned with the material remains of human culture. And that, in other words, not just the first century of the New Testament era or earlier than that, the Old Testament era. But archaeology should be interested in the whole history of human beings. But from a Christian point of view, we're interested not only in biblical history, Old Testament, New, but the history of the church. And so excavations of old churches, digging beneath old churches, and of course where it is allowed, beneath old mosques, these things reveal all sorts of things. We should be interested in how early Christians worshiped, because we're not real sure how Christians worshiped in the first, second, third centuries. It becomes clearer in the fourth. And so any kind of work like this, and Christians and Jews treasured the past, wanted to preserve it. And so you might be excavating a 4th or 5th century church, but it may contain clues about how Christians thought, prayed, worshiped, studied in previous generations. So being interested in the archaeology of 3rd, 4th, 5th century churches, that's not a waste of time. That's a good thing to do, even if one's primary focus is on, say, the New Testament era.
Dr. Craig Evans is Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and the Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University and author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. When you purchase this book using the Amazon link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand, and look for Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. Dr. Evans, thank you very much for being our guest.
You're very welcome.
When we come back from the break, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Jonathan Fisk. We've been doing a series with him on raising Christian children in an age of secular progressivism. Started a conversation last time on the boundaries as our children get older and have their own children. We'll continue that conversation after this.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
If you plan to buy one item commemorating the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, I highly recommend the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for October. It's titled The Reformation. You'll want to display this richly illustrated book on your coffee table, in your church library, or anywhere you can easily flip through this informative and beautiful book. The Reformation is written by regular guest Dr. Cameron McKenzie. Learn more about The Reformation at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.